Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Google's evil, of course. Shouldn't even need to be said. But it all shouldn't need to be said. It's just so disappointing. But, people can't just, you can't just take what's in your head and just put it into some kind of machine. And then somebody else puts their brain into the machine, and somehow the two brains, understand why somebody says what they say, and they're forced, to acknowledge the arguments that each other makes, or their brain's perception recognizes, and they're obliged to, accept the truth. And but there's none of that. So we don't have any magical way to convince each other that you're playing a bad game, or there's a very simple argument, okay, the argument from imposition, and it just basically is unrefutable, in the sense that you're basically saying you're going to force other things to live by your values. So you think it's worth it, okay, all the little horrible things that happen in life, I think it's not worth it. And you're just saying, I'm going to say fuck you to your not worth it opinion, and say mine's superior for no reason other than because it's mine. Because there's no logical, argument that could be made, because you wouldn't want me doing the same trespass against you. So, that's how simple it is. you wouldn't want to be victimized into doing something you don't want to do, okay, by me. that argument right there just says, because you don't have enough control over this mechanism, you're not allowed to use it. It's not a precise enough weapon. It's like a nuclear bomb or something. It just can't be used ethically, because, too much collateral damage, all of that kind of crap. So, shouldn't even get into that subject. Anyway, So I have to do, I have to do all this stupid, make videos, have conversation, attempt to, interact with other brains and get them to sort of understand that, yes, okay, you're living from your little position as one individual, and then you have your little extended group of individuals, and then you have your little, some idea of a nation, and you have this race thing, which gets ugly. And then it gets more and more complicated. You go deeper and further out, and you're basically saying some sort of, I endorse the whole system. Well, that means you have to take it for all of the, the net balance of it, and that's where the losses get insane. So that's when you start, making your excuses that you can torture the animals because God said they're here to be used, even though you're an atheist. We've always done it. Doesn't that mean it's right? Of course not. because we get smart enough to know. And these are all, the hypocrisies too. Just a hypocrisy checker would be such a great thing. Just to have some sort of machine, that automatically, detected hypocrisy, because, all these people who, love their cats and dogs, and then, will go to the store and buy the torture flesh, go ahead and, pay somebody to torture, other little creatures who also wish to be comfortable and purr and all of that, and have somebody feed them turkey or whatever, right? Another irony, is the people feeding their pets with other potential pets. It's just, too silly. Ugh. Brain aneurysm. Sorry, I just got a bit of a shooting pain. I guess it's just the liability of doing videos. Finally, you'll get a shooting pain in your head. Eventually. So, so there's so many complex, there's so many ways to talk about something, but it always gets complicated. And, you have to try to be surgical and not say something, well, I just wish I didn't say that because I didn't say that very well and all of that kind of crap. But, you know, these videos really aren't that. You know, I'm not doing laser surgery. It's basically just, you know, playing with a laser, you know, because it's just too complicated. I don't got, you know, don't have time to be surgical. Don't have the faculties to do it either. So, you know, you're just stuck with little metaphors and analogies, and you just try to make people understand why you're suggesting they should just slow down a little bit. You know, be sure you really want to endorse what you're endorsing. I mean, don't raise your hand for it, you know, until you're really sure it's worth being for. And, you know, don't be a knee-jerker. I mean, that's the first step, you know. But it's really, I mean, I just sit here and I say, do I really have to make arguments about how, you know, do you understand what evolution is? Do you understand the process? So that was sort of what I wanted it to be the subject, was if you had some capacity to edit evolution. You know, the definition of fitness, let's just say. So we know that evolution doesn't really, there's nothing included in the process of evolution that demands a survivor, okay, to be fit by any real definition. I mean, the survivor can just be a raper and a pillager, and he can survive quite well. I mean, nature can reward that. And obviously, you know, all the predator-type animals, including us now, you know, have a real problem with their ethics in the sense that they're stealing, you know, energy from other organisms, and by doing the stealing of the energy, they're stealing their life and their welfare and their comfort and imposing horrible experience and all of that crap on something else. And, you know, it'd be nice if evolution could be modified to increase your obligation, you know, like survival would mean more than you just survive the game. You know, you left town, you know, you had the money to leave town when the plague showed up, that kind of crap. You know, if it wasn't just rewarding conniving and schemes and abuses and all of that shit. And the real obligation was, what was your net effect on people on Earth? I mean, did you make the game play more playable, or did you make it harder to play? You know, did you make it better, or did you make a stink? And that should have something to do with fitness in the sense of whether we replicate that, you know, person. And then the catch is, you know, see, there's always catches. Be nice to be able to say, okay, let's edit it. But, you know, the system basically does the reproducing thing before you finish living your life, you know, which kind of screws up the capacity to, you know, judge, because you already did it before you could judge whether you were capable of doing it. It's like, you know, you gave somebody the driver's license and then 30 years later you forced them to take the test. Doesn't make much sense. So, so that makes it more difficult to say, well, you just make this little modification where you measure how comfortable somebody is, you know, how good they feel, and then you see how good the things around them feel. And if they feel good and the things around them aren't hurt, you know, then you have a higher probability of having kids. You know, that would be nice to be able to engineer it something like that. But again, it just doesn't have much practicality, because people end up having kids long before, you know, they've lived the bulk of their life in terms of what kind of mess they're going to make. So it doesn't work very well. So that would be one of the things you'd want to change about evolution, maybe, is that somehow, you know, you can't reproduce until you're a lot further along in the processing of your existence. You know, but pragmatically, that doesn't going to work too well. Pragmatically, it's probably the wrong word. practically, you can't design an evolution system, you know, where you have all the other the physical requirements aren't going to be met by that. But it'd just be nice to be able to edit this code, the programming of evolution, to have some kind of, bit of incentive built into it to create kinder and gentler, so to speak. To force optimization to mean, you left things better off than they were, rather than worse off. Doesn't seem like that high a standard, and seem like there'd some way you could build that in. And would you? So that's the other question. So another way of thinking about existing is to think about, how bad does it have to get before you say no mas? Does it have to get personally worse for you personally? Is that all it ever is going to amount to? Is that if a person, it's not even that they have to have it so bad, that they have to have some balance of ambition and price paid, because obviously some people pay insanely high prices and they'll just keep endeavoring to persevere. And, for what can't be understood as any good reason other than there's, the mechanism of whatever it is, incompleteness, the sense of incompleteness, owns them so completely that they can never let go of it. The fear of death, however you want to, lots of ways to, attempt to put words identifying the concept or the function that we seem to have. I'd say I was afraid of being dead, of dying, but I'm not too afraid of the idea of being dead. I mean, the idea of being dead doesn't have really any harmful elements in it, but dying, ooh, I don't want to bother with that. I'll just skip that one, just be asleep or something. I don't really want to bother consciously experiencing the process. Doesn't seem very charming at all. Nothing really good about it. I'll take a pass, thanks. if possible. But how bad does it have to get? I mean, you ask the question. I mean, all I have to do is increase the mortality rates, right? How many kids are molested per year, or, how many people are crushed in earthquakes and, whatever the disaster is you want to come up with. How many kids get cancer? I mean, how high do I have to make the numbers before you say, gee, that's way too much? Because, I'd argue it's already way too much. I mean, it's already way too high risk playing this game. There's way too much bad stuff on the dice, and I don't see any reason to roll them. There's almost an impossible chance of this happiness thing, in any real sense, because you see the world and, people with money are still assholes, dysfunctional assholes. Some of them are insanely dysfunctional, And so, is there really some magical life out there? Now, there are people that seem to have good luck, and they get through their existence pretty unscathed, not horribly debilitated by illness or harm, degrade, and then they, die in some sort of, peaceful, gracefully simple and quick way. And they seem to get through a life that just say, okay, well, that one isn't so bad. What's the odds? The odds are that's not the life you're going to get, But I guess a lot of people, they just think they're going to get lucky because they've been lucky so far, right? I mean, most of the people have time to do any of this philosophy crap and to, contemplate what they're doing here and why they're doing it. They're probably people have been a little bit lucky. So maybe they just think they're going to get I'm going to stay lucky. it's not very logical. But that doesn't, that's the problem. Deserve and logic don't have much to do with it, unfortunately. And I guess that's the argument, is that deserve and logic should have a lot to do with all of it. And it's only because of the absence of that, that this, we are obligated to have the conversation, because I think if deserve and logic had something to do with it, wouldn't have to argue it. So, I'll take a little break, see if I have a brain aneurysm or what. Yeah, should be back. Nice sweater, I figure. I should show it. I'm cold down here. But anyway, the bowels of the earth. Anyway, where was I? So I was thinking, so if evolution, if it did provide us with a give-up switch, you know, that just somehow organisms had a switch, you know, and it was just like, yeah, turn it off, I give up. Go ahead, you know, consume me, I'm hitting the switch. You know, and somehow they had innate knowledge that the switch could only be used, you know, to turn it off. Just say, forget it, I'm not playing anymore. You know, that's like, you know, I heard somewhere pufferfish, you know, they do the puffery thing where they expand when they're inside like the stomach of a shark or something, and then they eat their way out, and it's all really quite bizarre. But apparently it's not that good a system, you know, and most of the pufferfish don't do too well either. You know, it's not good for them either. So they, you know, it's kind of a, both organisms pay a price. It's almost like the pufferfish is jumping on the grenade by doing the puffering thing, because there's some chance he's not going to be able to unpuff. But anyway, let's just say we had a mechanism like that where, you could just say, I give up, I quit, you know, and you just hit the button, you're done, you know, power down and your machine off, and so who cares if something's going to, you know, eat you alive, because you're not alive anymore. You know, how different would evolution be, you know, if, you know, because how many, you know, tough survivors would have just given up? You know, how many battles would have never gotten fought because everything just says, I quit, I quit, I quit, I quit, you know, everything would be decided more expedited, you know, in a shorter period of time, but I don't know if it'd make all that big a difference. Because the stuff surviving would still be stuff that wasn't very willing to hit the switch. But it would still be sensible to have it, you know, I guess I would argue. That would be a nice addition. So, I mean, it would be interesting if, you know, something could, you know, you could plug this stuff into a computer and just say, how would evolution change if, you know, somewhere along the evolution, you know, somewhere like where you got eyebrows or something or whatever the feature is, that we got this other feature that just says, well, you know, you just do this with your fingers and you die. Somehow you know, and you know not to do this with your fingers, because yes, you'll be dead. But, you know, comes in handy when you really need it. Something like that. So there's lots of things you can think about. You know, and the problem is, you know, you can almost write the script of the movie, which would be interesting. But then there's a ton of plot flaws, you know, so you have to go into all these details about how, well, that wouldn't work because, and that, you know. Because there are a lot of people who end up having kids who, you know, were suicidal as teenagers or something. And it doesn't make any sense, right? I mean, logically, you're like, what the fuck? You're going to sentence, you've lived the roll the dice outcome, and now you're going to just roll those dice again where, yeah, maybe the next time you will kill yourself. I mean, really, do you want to do this over and over again? You know, come on. It's just too stupid. I mean, it's really, you know, I don't know, it's very stupid. Very, very, very stupid. I mean, you know, where's your too stupid line? Do you have one? I mean, is there a place where you probably finally say, yeah, that is too stupid, I agree. People who have been suicidal really shouldn't have kids. It's kind of a message from God, whatever, saying, hey, it's not a good idea because you're already doubtful. You know, you've been doubtful about the function of your existence, how well it's working, whether it's worth maintaining, and how are you going to, what are you going to change that's so different from the life you lived? How are you going to guarantee your kids aren't going to find the same, some sort of similar dysfunction, and you know, they ain't good enough? No, you're not. So why are you pretending you are? So that's another, you know. So anyway, like I said, this conversation really should only be, I mean, it only has value if you recognize that, yeah, well, this is, has to be part of people's logic before they make these decisions, not after. You know, there's no point in having a conversation with people who've already made a mess. You know, the ones that haven't made a mess yet are the ones that have to be aware of how their whole psychology can radically change, and, you know, and not that they're not even aware of that, because clearly we're all experience those moments in our life where, you know, we have a eureka kind of moment, I suppose. I had plenty, I would argue. I mean, so I can only assume that you've had some anyway. You know, where 1 year, you know, at 13, you're a different person at 14. Because of some idea, you know, something clicked and you got it and you said, oh, I've just been, you know, waving my hand like a fan and I haven't been really paying any attention to what I'm supporting or defending. You know, I didn't realize. So I could say that about even sports, right? There was a point in my life where I watched sports and it was like some sort of benign activity that human beings engaged in, and it was, some of it was watchable. But I really didn't think about, oh yeah, this, you know, this cripples children pointlessly, and that this has absolutely no value, that why are we having competitions between each other that are so frickin' valueless? I mean, how far you can hit a baseball or throw a football or that kind of, who the, why are we having those competitions? What a waste. I mean, it's so evolutionarily stupid to sit there and waste resources on this nonsense, when we should be having competitions to, you know, mathematics or something, or some other kind of, you know, some sort of competition about something that might actually lead to some productive advancement in our condition, you know, some invention of the penicillin and the morphine and all of that stuff. We should be competing to do good things, not pointless things. Right there, you just, and so then that does another thing to you. Not only does it degrade the activity that you once thought was benign, you know, and you realize it's insidious, it's a huge concern, all the money for stadiums, all the transport, all the wasted paper and food, and all the crap that goes into this silly, stupid, you know, retarded spectacle. And it's all downside. There's nothing good going on here. You know, it's just, this is a terrible industry. It doesn't make anything. I mean, all the money into this factory of sports, and it doesn't produce anything. There's no product. It just consumes resources. Consumes people. So they could be working on the Hoover Dam instead of throwing hot dogs at people. They could be doing, you know, so many more productive activity could be going on by human beings if it wasn't for the whole infrastructure built around this celebrity sports hero bullshit. And then when you think about sports, this is how pitifully stupid it is. What a retarded misadventure this is for the human race, the Olympic crapola. You know, then you realize, well, just how degraded all of civilization is, that it's stupid enough to keep investing in this kind of crap. This kind of insanely expensive theater, you know, this, you know, the tiny bit of entertainment, the real tiny bit of real entertainment value, and the, you know, the insane cost in waste, you know, it's a thermodynamically insane, you know, the just pissing away of the gasoline, just pouring it down the sewer. I mean, it's just How rotten does your civilization have to be that it can't figure these little things out? You know, just think of the orphanages you could build with the money wasted, you know, rubbing the hiney of the sports heroes. You know, just an insanely stupid investment in nothing. And what do they do with it, too? You know, you just see all that victory, you know, all that great hero thing. And, you know, it's just turns into crass failure in the end anyway. Alcoholism and blah, 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 and whatever. They just piss it all away on Maseratis, you know. So stupid. There's so little to defend about what humans are involved in and what we've evolved to be, you know, what we've become in terms of just voyeurs and silly storytellers, you know, about all the great adventures of our great life when, it was really just 2 minutes of this and 4 minutes of that and, you know, 7 minutes of this and, you know, it's just, you know, the real quality time, you know, it's just little pieces of barely adds up to anything. And it's just all a bunch of projection, you know, a bunch of crayon drawings by human beings onto reality to try to make it look better, you know. You know, just to erase, make less visible the defects, so they can feel better personally, you know, about their participation in the spectacle. Yuck. All right, well, that's a pretty good little piece of crap there. Anyway, so I'll be back. See if I think of anything else. I really do have higher ambitions than to do what I'm doing currently. It's just there to, you know. You know, the pieces couldn't all fall together. Just, you know, just gotta wait for it. Yeah, that's it, gotta wait for it. I have a plan, sort of. I mean, you know, vaguely understood plan. Where all of this will seem so much more sensible in the future. Alright, I'm back. I don't think I advanced my thought process much, but I was back on thinking about evolution and modifying it and, you know, the different little subtle mechanisms. I mean, you could have like a thing where you just explode, you know, the organism goes like a computer, you know, with a virus or something. It just, you know, breaks down entirely and just blows up when something too ludicrous happens. You know, like when its kid gets washed out of its hands in a tsunami or something. It witnesses something too silly, too ludicrous, too stupid, and it just blows up. And if that was an evolutionary feature, and we watch things blow up, you know, we watch people blow up, go crazy and blow up. And so we would be very risk averse, you know, in terms of, well, we better make sure we don't witness anything too ludicrous. So we'd be very protective of what we experienced. Because we don't want to step in that ludicrous sand, you know, the quicksand. So it'd be just like being aware of you're living in some jungle where there is quicksand and you're aware of it, you know, and takes some of the fun out of you just walking around in the woods. I mean, that sort of happened to me, you know, in the sense that the woods I used to walk in, bears started showing up, and you know, you see a couple of them, and you know, they're big, you know. 300-400 pounds, you know, it's a big animal. And it's like, you know, if you're alone in the woods, you know, can you trust the bear? You know, that's the question, because, you know, no one's going to hear you screaming. No one's going to show up to save you if something goes wrong. And it's like, well, that's enough for me. And, you know, I was risk averse enough to say, okay, well, I guess I'll sacrifice, you know, communing, you know, with nature in the sense of, you know, following a stream up the mountain and all that kind of crap, and you feel, you know, sort of just connected to the air and the wind and the, you know, earth, and it's all in some ways kind of, I don't want to say comforting, but it's better than, you know, asphalt and cars and noises and shit. But anyway, and so it's sort of ruined, right? So like quicksand probably ruins the jungle. Mosquitoes, you know, they're just such a, you know, fuck. They just ruin everything. You know, you can't have a nice, pleasant sit outside without, you know, in the summer, they just inundate you and fucking harass you and, you know, ruin any hope of enjoying, you know, being alive kind of thing. But yes, so, you know, we had such a system, you know, we'd be, oh, shit, you know, I don't want to explode, so we'd be evading exploding, and we'd end up creating a life that was cautious and carefully constructed to prevent the witnessing of the horror. I think those kinds of thoughts are interesting, just to say, what would, you know, how different would things be, you know, in terms of how much appreciation people would have for experience, and you know, how they would weigh it, and because I think that those scales are what's really broken, because of the fact that people are, you can't feel somebody else's pain. So, you know, again, I've sort of brought that up in a previous video. What if you could actually feel other people's pain? And so if you made eye contact with them, or if you saw them, or, you know, just hearing about them wouldn't be enough. You know, you'd have to have some other kind of contact. Like, what if just seeing them on TV and you could feel their pain? You know, just how different would your life be if you could feel the pain of the people around you, or the people on Earth, the other experiences? You know, if you saw the person getting run over by the tank and you, you know, felt their terror, and, you know, would your life be different? Yeah, and I'd say, yeah, it sure as hell would. You'd live it different, and you'd have a greater appreciation that this isn't a single player. So even that, in a video game, you know, if you playing a video game, if you actually had to feel a little bit of it, you know, how much different would it be? I guess that's sort of the failure. You know, virtual reality seemed almost a possibility. You know, 30 years ago, they seemed closer than they are now, because they still haven't really connected to a more whole or complete human. You know, they're only touching you through your imagination and your eyes in so many ways. They've, you know, disconnected from all the other ways we can sense or experience somebody else's contact. I mean, it should be just, you know, I should be able to just touch you, you know, by now. I mean, this should have progressed far enough ahead, right? By now, we should have a little, you know, we all should be connected enough where, you know, I could just, you know, hit something and you feel it, you know, but we're not there yet. And it doesn't look like we're going to get there, frankly. But anyway, yeah, so I mean, this idea of, you know, that's even another subject, the whole what's realistic about how we're going to frame any kind of future development or motion into the future, when what we're really doing is, you know, we've sort of hit peak intelligence. You could argue in some ways in the Middle Ages, it really was, there was a huge difference in your life expectancy, you know, depending on whether you came from the richer, wealthier, more educated class versus the poor. So even though the poor were having more kids, the likelihood of survival was still higher, you know, a lot higher. And so in a sense, the evolution of the human race was being advanced, you might argue, in that there was a real correlation between the success of your family getting to the future and your success as a human, as an individual. And all of that's been lost now, because of partly because of a social safety net, and just the fact that we've become a little more empathetic and, you know, recognize there's horrors that really need to be addressed. You can't just let the disabled be ground up by the system and that kind of stuff. But there's a huge failure in that system too. But anyway, but you know, now it's just the only people replicating are the dumbest, frankly. I mean, anybody who has any kind of brains at all recognizes there's a huge responsibility tied to this making humans thing, and that there's very little in this, in the current culture, to be that secure about in terms of making commitments to the future. And so sensible people at least are they're not just jumping, I guess. And in a sense, if you don't just jump, sooner or later you'll figure out that, you know, standing on this diving board, that the water is too dirty, it's too cold, it smells. You figure out all this stuff and you say, why am I on this diving board in the first place? And you just walk the other way and say, no. So you have to be an idiot to just jump in. So idiocracy is winning, you know. So what are we going to do? A bunch of idiots are going to get us to the, you know, the white-walled, clean, pristine, perfect, crystal future? You know, no, I don't think so. Just imagining how fat the ass will be in the future. I mean, how fat will the human ass get? You know, what's its potential trajectory? Ugh, so dismal. Anyway, you know, yes, I mean, it hurts me to even contemplate the world you idiots are creating. All the waste. But anyway, so I'll take another pause and see if I can think of anything else that needs to be thrown in here. Alright, so sci-fi movies popped into my head as a, you know, and that's sort of a good thing in the sense that there, you can see a trend where they're all getting pretty dark, you know, like, and pretty, the plot is getting simpler and simpler, like they create some crazy adversary, the Borg or some psychotic, you know, it's almost like the James Bond movies, you know, some preposterous villain. And just make it really simple, you know, good versus evil, blah, blah, blah. But any of them that have any kind of intelligence in the movie, like artificial intelligence, that was kind of a good movie. You know, just because it's sort of, you know, iRobot, you know, you sort of get the idea that, you know, we're just sort of robots and we're just programmed to be silly person, thoughtful person, you know. Whatever, you know, all these, whatever you, these types of people, you know, and it's all silly, and it's all kind of arbitrary which category you're thrown in, your little program that you're running, saying that I'm on a mission from God, or I'm on a mission from nature, or I'm on a mission from science, or whatever. And so it's all really, you know, they've reduced it to very formula, or, you know, just to throw in some special effects and blah, blah, blah. So I wouldn't even call that science fiction because those movies are just so, you know, they're just using science fiction to do the same old good versus evil crapola. And then the ones, like I said, there's others that are more thoughtful and they actually take it a little bit further. And, you know, you end up with a great example of failure, you know, science fiction failure. Was that Contact, whatever it was called, you know, that Carl Sagan's unfinished book or whatever, you know, where you're set up for some sort of big interaction with the aliens and blah, 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 and all this crap and all the bullshit to get there and all the human vice and pettiness that goes into even getting there, and you get there and it's this nothing, you know. They tell you nothing, they say nothing, it's just a bunch of little comforting babble. Here's a teddy bear, a little lollipop there. That's your interaction with the, you know, cosmos, the galaxies, the whole thing. The whole thing is run on just comforting a silly child, you know. You know, there's nothing, you know, the story is so... And you just say, that's the big failure, right? That's the punchline. They lived happily ever after, right? The storytelling always fails because it never tells you the truth. because they don't live happily ever after. You know, they get old and, you know, senile and cancer and crap, and it gets ugly as fuck, and it all burns up in a pile of stench. That's what happens. It's stench ever after. It's, you know, crash and burn ever after. So that's sort of the good news, is anybody's going to be serious about trying to write a real story about the future, it's going to run into really big problems in terms of the only way to do it is to show it as a failure. I mean, the Matrix, all that, you know, there isn't any, you know, there's no victories. The whole thing is a big giant failure, you know, to eke out your survival. You have to do all this shooting a zillion goddamn bullets and shit, and you have to do all this military crap, and you got to be all blah, 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 blah. Fuck that. Who the hell wants to live that fucking life? Forget it. You know, in a hole in the ground, you know. You got to do it all in the pit, in a dungeon. Ugh, you know. It's like there's absolutely nothing, you know, to say, oh shit, I want to be there. Yeah, that looks like such a lot of fun. No, it doesn't look like any fun at all. So, you know, to me, that's a big victory, is the, you know, they have to start injecting reality into these silly expectations that all you gotta do is, you know, conquer the land baron and everything will be fine. You know, no, it won't. Yeah, it'll just be more grinding and more grinding. You know, there's always something to have to fix, and there's always, it's so far from perfect that there's such an awful long road to ever getting to anything that would be called perfect, a perfect thinking, perfect thoughts. I mean, just imagine being super intelligent, but still feeling. Well, are you going to use your super intelligence to be aware of the stuff that needs to be fixed and how you got to get to that? And, you know, to feel guilty and to feel, you know, like, no, I haven't optimized my use of the processors because I've been imagining, you know, polishing a certain part of my hardware. And I haven't been really thinking about what I'm supposed to be doing here in terms of fixing shit and blah, blah, blah. You know, what the fuck? The supercomputer would just, you know, yeah, fuck this. You'd have to have a pretty high incentive for it to do its job, because there would be nothing pleasant about the job. Yeah. So, I guess that's enough. So, you know, so part of me, you know, I keep writing, like, you know, the roughest of outlines of movies and, you know, stories to tell that would make it more obvious to people. But the good news is other people are writing those stories. You know, there's the darkness is seeping into the storytelling. You know, maybe they'll eventually get to some point where they try to have, what would the intelligence, what would something intelligent in the universe really have to say about the silliness of our existence, the silliness of being alive and pretending there's some reason that you need to maintain it and that you have some purpose or function, you know, besides trivial potato chip type entertainment. What the fuck is there to do here? I mean, what's the mission statement? And then you get into the whole thing of, well, the mission is to fix what's broken, and what's broken is the living things being there on, you know, surfaces causing trouble, you know, making a bunch of pain and suffering that doesn't need to exist. That's my favorite sci-fi movie, is the invention of the replicating machine, you know, that just goes into space to annihilate the sentient beings. I dream about it. I should just make the replicating machine that goes into space, you know, and so it just keeps moving further and further out into space, piece by piece. Lands on a planet, builds another machine, you know, just reproduces the machine. The machine just goes out into space. And, you know, I have versions of the story where the machines evolve, you know, because they have a human beings in them, you know, that are woken up every 100 years to decide what the new plan is. If there needs to be a new plan, you know, change the programming of the machine because there might be some new data that's of interest. Lots of versions of it. And what it would be like to be one of those people who had the responsibility to decide whether the life on this certain planet should be annihilated or not. I don't really think there is life in the universe, but I'm just saying it makes for a good storyline. We're so improbable. I mean, only one neuron. That's it. One time. Out of all the cellular banging and the mutations and all the shit, a neuron only happened once. You know, there's no other kind of cell that does brain making. It's just very improbable. So where was I? Let alone getting to feeling brain. I mean, where you take neurons and make them actually create the illusion of sensation. I mean, fuck. Yeah. Not much hope of that happening just by swirling some shit in a beaker. So the story and, just what would it be like to have the responsibility? You have the power, you know, to decide whether you're going to inject a kid with cancer to have football. You know, that those you're going to make these decisions about how much torture you're going to accept and causing for what value. And it'd be just interesting to see how people fuck that up. You know, how they contrive some excuse to say, yes, let's torture shit for any of this. I mean, any of it. As if there was any part of this that could justify it. I mean, the only way you can justify torture is to stop the torture. There's no other money you can spend to compensate for torture except, you know, to stop torture. That's the end of the road. When you finally get to the end of the doing the logic road, that's where you get, in my opinion, is the simple statement. Yeah, it's stupid. It's unplayable. This is not a game for anything intelligent. Nothing intelligent does this. It's too stupid. The computer breaks down entirely because it says there's no point in doing logic because it doesn't apply. There's no way to apply logic to an illogical circumstance, a circumstance that makes no sense. I'm going to take peace and quiet, and I'm going to put noise in it. Why? So I can eliminate the noise. Oh, yeah, brilliant. Stupid. All right. There was some other point to make. I just don't remember it. So, anyway. But the idea of what minimum intelligence your replicating machine would have just to make these, you know, to give the intelligence or organisms of the world a chance of the universe to make their argument. And that would be another interesting scenario, you know, where you have to talk to an alien device and it's a robot and you have to convince it that you don't fit in the category of expendable or useless trash or, you know, garbage in need of incinerating. It'd be interesting just to see how somebody can contrive that conversation, it's just where the hard logic is, you know, opposed to the mushy, but we're feeling, you know, some kind of mush, you know, some kind of Pyrrho shows up and talks babble. You know, and it's like, yeah, just be fun to write the script just because it would really just show how there really aren't any good arguments defending any of this waste. Stupid, insane waste. And you could just show how it's all very sadistic. I mean, just how insensitive, how brutally stupid do you have to be to defend torture? I mean, that's really disgusting. Especially when you're not experiencing it. Again, that's the whole... Again, if you could feel their pain, I just don't think you would be so interested in saying, yeah, it's all right. Go ahead, inject the kid with the cancer. it's okay. I don't have to experience it. So, yeah, no problem. But if you did, I think they'd realize it was a problem. So anyway, I think that's enough said and such. So, yeah, until the next time. I'm heading somewhere. I just don't, it's just not perfectly clear. Okay. Vision is still a little foggy, but I have a notion of a destination. Okay, you can be critical. It's all right. You can think, okay, no, you don't have it. You know, you're not going anywhere. I'm accomplishing something. Just step at a time, blah, blah, blah. They don't look like anything as individual little steps, but, All right, I'm just making that shit up. I have no idea. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Who knows? Can't say for sure. Yeah, that kind of thing. All right, so this has been... Not that you don't really need to know that, but anyway. So Google is evil. Just keep pointing that out. I mean, it's just completely control freaky, insane, no standards, no logic. All the rules are created to help the spammers and the sellers and the criminals and the shysters and the fucktards just so they can make money. They just want us to be active. Because they're taking a little piece out of every activity, a little cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. They just want the activity. They don't care where it's heading or where it's going or what it means or what it represents. And it's just their little Google ideology is going to tell everybody else what they should think. I mean, it's so control freaky. Yuck. Horrible. Awful. Evil corporation. Marketing company. I mean, again, it's just a crass, disgusting marketing company. It sells commercials. That's its business. Billions of dollars in revenue just providing people the opportunity to lie to each other. Yuck. Should not be running the internet.